Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the little children, go get Grandma and Grandpa out of their room. Come gather around the radio and listen to This Life with Dr. Drew. There he is.
Well, when were you born, Bob?
1961.
1930.
I just love old times.
Reminder that This Life is brought to you on by Bergamet. BergametNA.com is where you can get it. It's, of course, a polyphenol product that... if you listen to Dr. Ehrlich's interview we did just, I think, last podcast or recently, you may be as persuaded as I am that this is something that can really significantly affect vascular well-being and health. The supplements available at the banner, also at drdrew.com. Also,
Aloe House.
Tell me about that.
Aloe House Recovery Centers in Malibu and soon to be in Silver Lake. Just looked at a place in Silver Lake. And it's a treatment center that I founded, kind of back to the basics like you and I did at Los Encinas.
Yeah.
Real abstinence-based and no BS and get a job.
Social
and,
model, 12-step. Yeah,
get a job.
Vocational rehab.
It's very hard to get them to get a job.
I know.
When they can relapse and go to another fancy rehab. Ugh. It's so difficult. But anyways, we're fighting the good fight out there.
That is ALO Recovery, alorecovery.com. And again, Bergamet. And if you're interested in supporting the podcast, go to the drdrew.com and click on the Amazon link. All your shopping needs there. And it doesn't cost you a thing, but we appreciate it. Also, you can see the sponsor banner. You can also see them at thislifepodcast.com. Click on the links. Check out their websites. We work hard to choose the advertisers that we... elect to allow
only ones we're associated with.
Yeah, and their products and service we want to be able to stand by. So thank you all for your support. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to hear from our friend Elizabeth Bachner, who is graceful.com with two L's. She, of course, is the midwife we did a whole podcast with recently. And she's coming to join us because we are joined by Allison Rosen. Allison, it's so good to see you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Allison Rosen is your new best friend, is the podcast. How many? You have zillions of downloads.
I have really good downloads.
Yes,
I'm really in the zillions.
and it's sustained, or how long have you been doing it?
Well, it started as a streaming internet video show that I did from my living room in Brooklyn every Sunday night. And that was called Allison Rosen's Your New Best Friend. It was 3 hours. It had some of the segments that I do on the podcast now. So I did that for a couple years. And then I changed it over to a podcast in 2012. So 4 years.
Crazy. And Allison lives out in Claremont, or went to college out in Claremont.
Yes.
Pomona, the real one.
I'm going there to see Jackson Browne on Wednesday night.
Weird.
He's at Pomona?
Yeah, he's playing at that fancy hall there at Pomona College. What's the one they're so
big
proud
Bridges?
Of.
Bridges.
Yeah, Bridges.
Very
and he's
cool.
Playing for the you know, the hippie music store in Claremont.
I saw Jackson Browne at UC Irvine in 1973.
He's changed a bit now.
But that music store is owned by Ben Harper's grandparents.
His grandfather did start it. The mom lives right up the street from me. I live right there in Claremont.
Oh, I miss Claremont.
It's the greatest thing. It's like a little bit of Connecticut right here in Southern California.
Yeah. But it's more built up, I think, than when I was there. Because now, isn't there a Flappers Comedy Club there?
And yeah.
I remember when the Press opened, which is a restaurant there that serves alcohol, and that was like a whole big deal because I don't think there was any place that served alcohol in the village before that, maybe.
The Dansen didn't?
The Dansen.
That's my in-law's restaurant.
I liked the Dansen.
Oh, there you go.
That's his in-law's restaurant.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Your in-law, and I know, so these are the parents of the woman who just had a baby,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, they're the grandparents of Sydney.
How old is your baby now?
1 month old. One
wow.
month and 2 days.
Crazy.
And she's at Laguna Beach on the beach.
Oh, nice. Oh,
walking around in one of those things around the stomach. You're going to love that.
The hands-free baby accoutrement.
It's got to be hippie looking if you're from Claremont. It can't look like outdoor equipment.
I went to college with President Alexander's daughter. I think I told you that. Remember the president of Pomona?
I do.
Then. And I had a bunch of friends in Pomona. And I saw... I was visiting people there, and I saw Animal House, and that little theater just around the corner.
Yeah, the Lemley. Mm-hmm.
It's like a Lemley. It was not a Lemley then. It was just some little mom-and-pop thing.
I don't even remember the theater.
Yeah, it's right there by Jamba Juice. I go there all the time.
Not a Jamba Juice, I mean, either. a long time ago.
Yeah,
1979.
This is very hyper local content for people in Claremont. Potentially, people in Upland might take interest.
Red Laverne.
Laverne. You think we're going to Laverne? Right, Rancho Cucamonga, maybe.
No, but, they're not allowed there.
Cucamonga beyond, adjacent. Yeah. So Pomona got one, you know, they do these reviews of all the schools in the country. Pomona got number one in one of these reviews, like overall.
Good.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, not just colleges. It was just like overall. I was like, oh my God.
More than just institutions
in
general.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Pomona. I always like when that happens because for the most part, people don't know what Pomona is, or if they do, they think it's a junior college.
Or they think Cal Poly Pomona.
Yes. Yeah. So I like when it, I still feel pride all these years later.
What'd you study there?
English.
Literature.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's your favorite?
Of all the Englishes?
No, of all the books and writers.
Oh,
what was
God,
your,
that's
what
so
was
hard.
Your, what was your back, major focus you love?
Back then I really liked Emily Dickinson. I liked Keats. I got into some modern stuff, so I liked Pynchon. I liked Shakespeare, kind of the classics.
My landlord is the leading authority at the Claremont Colleges on James Joyce. He's written two books about
it. Wow.
And I'm the only tenant he's ever had who knew what James Joyce is.
Really?
Yes, it's so sad, the stupidity of America.
Yes.
Is that crazy? I go, Joyce, you're kidding. I have a bunch of Joyce biographies, mm-hmm. maybe one that you wrote, and I showed him the books I had, and he said, no, I know, oh, I know him. I know him. So it's a really neat community.
Let's get into weird, geeky territory for a second. I've picked up Ulysses 10 times.
It's hard to read.
I've not made it through either.
But I've not made it through 100 pages.
Yeah.
But I love Portrait of the Artist as Young Man.
See,
love
to me, that's sort of like, I loved Crying of Lot 49 by Pynchon, and I've read it a bunch of times, but... Shoot, what's the big Pynchon one that I'm
Portnoy's
blanking?
Portnoy's Complaint.
No, that's Bellow, I think. Okay. Or is that Roth? I'm forgetting.
Roth.
But,
Saul Bellow.
Gravity's Rainbow. Yes.
Pynchon?
Gravity's Rainbow. Have not made it through. Also haven't finished Infinite Jest. They should take my degree away.
Infinite Jest, I've
was
also...
Was he your professor?
By the way...
No, he came there right when I left, but the summer after I graduated, I was able to go back and hear him give speeches there and stuff. It was pretty cool.
Say who we're talking about.
Oh, David Foster Wallace.
This is water.
Oh, let's see.
Go. I have a tattoo that says this is water.
Well, explain why you said what that means.
This is water it's not a story he invented. He
told
heard
it,
this story.
He told it at graduation.
At what college, though? I thought it was Emerson, and you said it wasn't.
It's like Bates or something. It was somewhere in New England, though. Yeah.
Anyways, it was supposed to send the undergrads out into the world excited. And he just said, let me tell you something about what you're about to walk into.
Oh, no.
You've never heard the lecture called
It's
This
great.
Is Water.
It's
so great. Because it really is what... I think I started realizing that that's what life was when I was like 43. I think I just ignored it.
So for the people who don't know, which is including me, what does he mean by
it's
this is
water?
It's
about the little everyday frustrations and how our prejudice, our what does he call it, preset.
Well, essentially, the water part was he told a parable. And the story was about these two young fish were going along, and an older fish came along and said, hey, boys, how's it going? Water sure is beautiful today. And they went, uh-huh. And then they're swimming away, and they go, what's water? Because you don't recognize
right.
some of the context and familiarity.
The life of life. This is life. This is all. This is it. It's in line at the supermarket.
Right.
It's not assuming that. The great thing I like is not assuming that the Hummer driver that just cut you off is an arrogant Republican, Schwarzenegger fan.
God,
but it might be a mother.
You've gotten more. Or either or as the world has gotten ready to or. You've got to stop,
from this,
man.
It started with this lecture. No, I'm more, I can just see it.
Just be your old antisocial self. Just don't pick
watch
sides.
Watch this, what he says. How do you know that's not a mother whose prior child died in a car accident and she's just driving because she thinks that's the safest car for her surviving child? How do you not
she didn't
know
even cut
that?
You off. She's still driving like an asshole. I'm just saying, for the story you told, she's still an asshole who's been through a lot.
The point is,
there we go. That's,
the point
I
is,
guess that's the point.
It's not about us, yet we make it always about us.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the human condition, right?
I don't know.
Certainly these days.
I think
the
pathway to enlightenment is to realize it's not about you.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, show's over. Anyway.
No.
Oh my God, we figured it out.
And what? Drop mic. But what I've discovered, because I'm kind of coming into this late in life, is children. Because I couldn't find meaning and
coming into what late in life? meaning?
What is the meaning of it? What is the purpose? And so I had, you know, I had a son in the chaos of my addiction, and I tried to do my best from when I got sober. He was 8 when I got sober, and we have a good relationship, and he's a hard worker, and he's a good kid. He's 30, going to be 30. But it wasn't what I had hoped to provide to him. So then I have a 6-year-old and a newborn, and that brings meaning every day. It's about somebody else, not me, and not my opinion of who should be president or this or that or all this. I like this, I don't like that, good, bad, black, white, right, wrong. You're just trying to, it's much more gray and much more interesting. So this morning,
messier.
So the baby and Chrissy went to Laguna with her mom to go to the beach. So it was just me and Elvis. Daddy Elvis morning, right? So I said, no technology.
Elvis is how old?
He's 6. He's going to be 6 in 2 weeks.
This is the best story. So this is of the greatest you're about thing. To hear.
So I'm thinking, like, what, with no iPads and no technology and no Pokemon Go, what do we do? So I said, let's play rock and roll. So I went and I put Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow, the hardest, coolest riff of guitar ever.
And hold on, Allison was in a rock band.
I was.
Okay, you know that riff. Dun, 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 dun. And I'm playing air guitar, blasting it in my office. And he's standing there and he just walked over to the stereo and he said, rock and roll is for rich old men. And he walked.
Oh my God.
Old white men.
Not white. No, rich old men.
Rich old men.
And he said, let's go outside.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Wait, where did he get that?
That's what I said.
Have you ever said that?
I don't know. Maybe his mom has. Maybe he's just picking it up, but maybe he's putting two and two together.
That's insane.
Maybe he's putting two and two together that everyone I know is a rich old guy, and we all like rock and roll.
Well, it's weird that he brought that in today, and I was like, oh my God, it's the greatest thing a child has ever said.
Yeah.
But strangely, this morning, I was thinking to myself, God, I have strange conversations with myself in the shower every day.
That's where I really get down with myself too.
I'm not even realizing I'm doing it until later it comes back. I'm like, oh, what was that? But here was the conversation today. I was thinking about the people. I think it was the fact that your band, Thelonious Monster, was mentioned on vinyl.
Yeah.
And my wife,
that shows how old we are.
Susan had just mentioned that to me. And I was thinking about, you know, those bands and thing, and thinking, God, those guys were such assholes. They were just guitar players that learned how to play guitar at a certain moment of history. And that made them...
Lived off it for decades.
I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about you. I was talking about the vinyl thing I was thinking about. And then I thought... God damn it! If you had to practice
medicine, good for 1 hour.
I thought to myself, why do we allow Plant into this country after what he did to American women for 20 years? I mean, he was so abusive. He would put cigarettes in their face. He would drive motorcycles over them. And Sharon Osbourne talks about this. She goes, because they thought American women were just easy and they were just foreigners and they weren't barely people, and they would come over here. Their sociopathic, grandiose bullshit selves, and would abuse the shit out of women. I thought, why do we? That guy should not be allowed back in the country.
I didn't know all those stories.
All the Led Zeppelin guys.
Oh, you got to read Hammer of the Gods.
You never read that book, Allison?
No.
Oh, well, I don't know if you should or shouldn't.
No, I have to.
They should not be.
I'll read it.
Here's the full conversation.
It will change your feeling about Jimmy Page tremendously.
Here's the full conversation. I thought to myself, if I were running for president right now, I'd say, these guys should not be allowed in the country. These four guys, do not allow these guys in the country. They are criminals. They are abusive. They are, I have a million witnesses. And leave them out. They should not get a visa.
I love that would be your platform.
Yeah, right?
So, yeah.
Who could argue with it, though?
So what I find funny is, and if you come from music, so a couple of my friends, for whatever reason, the Ideas World dropped a song on top of their heads, and they wrote it, and they've been living off of it for 35 years.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. They play every summer, and they make hundreds of thousands of dollars. They, up until the last 10 years, they received hundreds of thousands of dollars every year just for one idea. And I thought, where else in an occupation do you get that?
But that was a weird moment. It's over. It's now just for rich white guys, rich old guys. But we got to take a break. We'll be right back at this. Hey, our sponsor this week is Bergamet. You can get Bergamet at Bergamet, BERGAMETNA.com. That is BergametNA.com. And we are joined this week by the ambassador to the bergamot fruit, Dr. James Ehrlich. Dr. Ehrlich, why don't you describe your medical history and training?
Well, I'm a clinical associate professor in the Division of Endocrinology at the University of Colorado. And initially, I was an anesthesiologist. And most of my career in the last 20 years has been involved in tests and technologies in the early detection of cardiovascular disease.
Let's put that in sort of a layman or simple language. You're interested in preventing vascular disease, which is like heart disease and strokes, these sorts of things, and the metabolic conditions that can accelerate that or cause that. Would that be about accurate?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, that's very accurate. I like that.
And in the course of this, you were in sort of a traditional medical research background, and you came across Bergamet. Tell me about that.
Well, a friend of mine who's a preventive cardiologist in Australia, and is kind of like the Dr. Oz of Australia. He's got his own successful radio show and a lot of books out, alerted me to a fruit that only grows in southern Italy that he now has 5,000 patients on, and he uses it to decrease cardiometabolic risk factors. So he told me about it. I then went over to Italy to investigate this. I became part of the efforts to research this. And now I'm the ambassador to Bergamotto. Since 2013, I'm the director of research in the United States for this particular fruit. And there's a big, big research laboratory in Calabria, Italy, at the University of Catanzaro.
And I'm not a supplement guy. I have to be really persuaded. And you exposed me to some of the research that was coming out of that institute. And it was really quite striking on many fronts. And I've been persuaded. What would you say the benefits are of taking Bergamet?
Well, I think the main benefit is lowering what we call cardiometabolic risk. In other words, about 35% of us are affected by metabolic syndrome, which is considered the epidemic of the 21st century.
I got it.
It's basically
I have it.
Yeah, you have a little bit of it. I think very little, probably, but that's my guess.
Well, little in the sense that I work hard to push it back, but I've got it for sure.
Yeah, and many of us have it in the standard way. We don't get enough exercise, or we eat poorly, and so expanding waistlines, elevated cholesterol, hypertension, and other types of factors of insulin resistance combine to cause this syndrome, which is now becoming the way most people get heart attacks, strokes, and diabetes. So this particular fruit, the bergamot fruit, our formulations are called Bergamet for the metabolic syndrome, which is this very dangerous condition that's extremely prevalent in the United States.
Now, in the past, you and I would probably treat that with exercise, diet, statins, cholesterol-lowering medications. Those are, by the way, all things I still do myself. But you're saying that Bergamet may delay the need for all that, or could be a good adjunct to that. Is that accurate?
Oh, I think it's an adjunct. I think proper lifestyle management is never substituted by either nutraceuticals, supplements, or drugs. I'm a strong believer in statins for people who can tolerate it, especially those who have plaque, which can be measured. And so I, for example, use Bergamet along with statins.
You prescribe it that way.
Well, that's the way I use it personally.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. That's what I'm doing. That's actually what I'm doing.
But now I'm on twice a week statins, and then I take the Bergamet every day, and I get a nice complementary effect because Bergamet lowers blood sugar. Statins don't do that. In fact, statins are feared in a few people to raise blood sugar to the point of diabetes. And Bergamet raises HDL, the good cholesterol, much better than a statin. So I like the complementary effects, including lower of triglycerides quite substantially, and decreasing visceral abdominal fat, the dangerous abdominal fat that's a very active endocrine organ causing heart disease and stroke.
How does the polyphenol in the bergamot fruit do this?
Yeah, well, the bergamot fruit has a mixture of polyphenols. It's probably the most antioxidant polyphenol fruit on the planet. And some of these polyphenols are really HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors. That's a fancy word for statins. They're natural statins, but they don't have side effects. And some of them are called gut sterol inhibitors. They inhibit the absorption of cholesterol, like a drug called Zetia. And then a few of them are AMP kinase activators, like metformin, that both decrease visceral fat and drive blood sugar down. So these are just these complex mechanisms. We've got a lot of chapters and textbooks about all the mechanisms of action, but basically that's it. It really both improves cholesterol profiles and blood pressure and insulin resistance. Very importantly, uniformly it improves the health of vessels. So even if you don't have risk factors, if you want healthier vessels, and we've proven this by looking at how compliant these vessels are, how loose they are. You don't want stiff vessels. And also what's called endothelial function, which is the health of the lining of all of your arteries. And these are proven, we've done extensive studies proving the value in vascular health.
The endothelium is the cells that line the inside of arteries. And when you were coming up and I was coming up, certainly, it was one of it's an organ system, much like you said that gut fat is an organ system. This is an organ system.
Yeah, it's the largest organ in the body. It covers 6 tennis courts in surface area in the average 150-pound man. So it's a quite interesting tissue or organ.
Another question is, once you're on this substance, should you stay on it forever?
We don't know that. We think a long-term investment, at least a year, is advisable. You know, some people don't see massive changes in their cholesterol numbers unless you do advanced testing of cholesterol, so they get off of it because, you know, they don't notice that their vessels are getting healthier and that kind of thing. We don't know about lifetime use, but it certainly is something that very quickly improves cholesterol, blood sugar, blood pressure, abdominal fat, and inflammation.
And then you have different preparations. There's Bergamet Pro and then Mega Plus. Which? How do we know which one to choose?
Well, I think we're moving towards Bergamet Pro Plus, and I think the Mega has been available on the Internet. The Pro Plus has traditionally been available by physicians, but now we are making it available for your listeners as the Pro Plus, which is probably the top of the line. A little stronger.
I just have some out on my countertop in my bathroom because I've got to take it to some patients that want to do this, and I'm persuaded. Dr. James Ehrlich, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate all the info.
Thank you.
We'll check in with you again.
Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Take care. All right, we're back.
So we want to get into this baby thing, Drew.
Now that, but I've got Bruce Heischober just stopping by too, and Bruce used to work. Why don't you grab that mic there, Bruce? Bruce worked with Allison over at the Corolla Network when Allison was the news girl for Adam Carolla.
Yes, I know.
She was the best.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. I miss you, Dr. Bruce. I miss you, Doctor. I saw you once because I did Loveline.
Yes.
So I saw you once after all that went down. But yeah, I haven't seen Bruce in forever.
Buried in the ER.
Mm-hmm.
Buried in the ER.
What?
It took me a second to understand too, but he's been buried in the ER, and I have not had any emergencies, hence I haven't seen him.
I see. And he's out in wherever, Redlands or wherever,
Fontucky.
Well, then tell us this: did you find our Claremont conversation riveting?
No, I love the folk music center there. I love that place.
There we go.
That's what the benefit.
And I know
was
the Harpers. Yeah. I know those guys.
Okay, hold on. Let's go to babies.
Yeah, I love Claremont.
Babies.
Is pregnant. Bruce, that's why I wanted you in here.
Are you feeling happy? Are you feeling nauseous?
I am now 20 weeks, so I'm like halfway through. I was feeling pretty sick the first 3 months, but I understand that that's pretty normal. Actually,
you didn't throw up though?
I didn't. I was very lucky.
You're so lucky.
Yeah, I know a lot of women. I didn't realize it feels like a constant hangover.
Mm.
For some reason, I thought that morning sickness would just feel like you just want to throw up, but it actually is sort of your whole body feels
sick.
Well,
this thing is growing inside you.
Yes, and your body is angry at it. That's why I don't understand. Like, what is the? I don't know if anyone actually knows. Doctors, what is the function of feeling sick the first trimester? Is it really your body trying to fight it?
No, there's a couple theories. But first of all, let's straighten out. It's probably the progesterone.
Progesterone, I was going to say side effect.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that a baby's growing, it's that your placenta is starting to produce all this progesterone.
And also, I was on progesterone shots for the first 12 weeks every day.
That makes people so depressed. So sick.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you get depressed too?
No, not super duper depressed. I mean, I did IVF, and we'll get into this, but like I pretty much don't see the benefit of natural childbirth, and I've been trying to figure out why.
Well,
because
we're going to bring Elizabeth Bachner back from graceful.com to talk about, because she's a She's a midwife. Now she knows. It's but easy a lot to
of
review it.
You know, I think a lot of women grapple with that, and for me, it's like the whole natural thing holds no appeal, and I've been trying to figure out why. And maybe it's because from the beginning, getting pregnant has been such a scientific process. Oh, I did IVF. I did 8 egg retrievals. And
they treat you like such an incubator, like you're a biology experiment. They don't prepare you for all the ups and downs and
right. So and I had been on, you know, so many different hormones, and then I did Lupron. For 8 weeks.
Lupron throws you into menopause.
Yeah. So that was probably the worst.
Yeah. That.
Why would they want to throw you into menopause?
Then they hyperstimulate the ovary.
Well, no, actually, Lupron is used at the beginning of IVF. For me, I have endometriosis.
Oh, okay.
So they wanted to suppress all that to maximize the chances, to make my uterus perfect before putting in
your
the embryos.
Your uterus is perfect.
That's what I told them, but it really wasn't. It was a hoary, craggy and place.
And we didn't answer the question about sickness. There is evolutionary theory that it's to keep you from eating anything that would poison you or make you sick in other ways.
Because your sense of smell gets so
and
strong.
And get this, is what we learned along.
No, absolutely. Very good.
Here's what we learned along the way. No matter what, if you eat or don't eat, that parasite in you is going to suck whatever it wants.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
how crazy is that?
Oh, the placenta is the most amazing organ of the body. And placenta is unbelievable, right, Bruce?
Absolutely.
That's the one. That's the most mysterious, craziest.
Do you dissect it when your doctors? Do you look at it when you?
You look at the microbiology.
It
mostly.
Just sat there for like 2 hours.
Then we eat it.
Then we eat it. People retain them and make pills out of them.
A friend of mine just pills did that.
Did what? Did
Catherine
what? Allison did what?
Had the placenta encapsulated.
Right. Yeah. Desiccated.
So to eat it?
Yes. Yeah. I also don't have an interest in that. I don't know what's wrong with me.
You're an intellectual elite.
I guess.
None of this goofiness.
Rock and roll is for me.
None of this goofiness holds any appeal. The curtain has been pulled.
The only sort of like thing like that I did was I read after the embryo transfer that eating pineapple and Brazil nuts can help make it take, even though that like doesn't make sense. But I thought, what the harm?
Susan went big on seaweed for the folate, not knowing that would become a big issue. Folic acid, then something did become a issue. Who knows?
Yeah, that's Michelle, in all the prenatals.
Michelle Poe does our newsletter. I know what this newsletter is going to be about. So good luck.
So with scientific, so you might as well just follow it all the way through. So let science rule.
Is that
how you feel?
What
about all the literature you read as a child that talked about all nature and all that?
It was mostly
death and destruction. Jane Eyre.
I'm not
Jane Eyre.
Oh, we got her. We got Elizabeth here.
So Jane Eyre.
Let's bring Elizabeth. Hey, Elizabeth, how are you?
I'm good. How's everyone doing?
Great. It's great to hear your voice. We have our special guest, Allison Rosen, who is 20 weeks pregnant. And,
hey, Allison.
Hello. Nice to meet you. So, okay, can you tell me this? I was just saying to the guys here, I have kind of zero interest in natural childbirth, even though my mom had my sister and me naturally, and I have a lot of friends who had their kids unmedicated. But that kind of holds no appeal to me, and there's part of me that even wonders, is a C-section better than a vaginal delivery just because of what I know that you talked about on the episode of this show that you were on, like the pelvic architecture and all that. I don't really know why there's no part of me that wants to bear down and do this the way that women have been doing it for zillions of years, but I don't know. It sounds painful, but maybe if someone could explain to me the benefit of all the natural stuff.
Well, I have a question for you. Did you have this opinion before you got pregnant, or did this happen during your IVF journey?
Ooh.
I don't know that I had ever really thought about it. But I suspect it is partly because this has been such a scientific process and because I did 8 egg retrievals and I used to have a real big fear of anesthesia and a fear of IVs and a fear of all of that. And I kind of got over it and got used to all of that. So I think that I look at that now as like an IV is a way, a sort of a conduit to feeling a little bit better. I think of childbirth as potentially quite painful, and I have experienced pain in my life, and I don't need this experience to be painful too.
Right. And I also want to honor the fact that you've gone through IVF. Like, you had to go through 8 egg retrievals. Emotionally, there's a lot going on of really wanting to make sure and control everything, because there's a lot there. You know, it's not easy just doing 8 egg retrievals.
No.
So I could also understand from a mental place of really wanting to continue down that road to really just keep trying to control everything.
Well, I do love control.
She touched on a word.
I'm very, very much into control.
She touched on a word you're familiar with.
Yes. In fact, I would say that's the hardest thing of being pregnant, even though I'm so happy that I'm pregnant and I'm so excited to meet the little guy. But the fact that it's so much of it's out of my control is not easy for me.
Right. So I really want to honor that in you. And if I was working with you, I would never want to push you past what a limit is that you're comfortable. And what I'm looking for is I am looking for a mama to feel empowered in her choice. And if you're educated about everything and you're like, this is the way to go, it's like stand up in your truth and go, this is how I'm going to be the good mother of this child. Because we don't know everything. Everyone's so individual. So first of all, I'm coming from a place of I just want to honor what feels good for you.
Well, thank you.
Then we can come in with the educational piece. I mean, having a vaginal birth, our bodies are made to go into labor. Our bodies are made to birth babies vaginally, and the uterus is like the hormones and the physicality. It's all meant to work together in this amazing clock to birth babies. And there's a lot of reasons that they're finding out for it, of like the pressure of the baby going through the vaginal canal. And then, do you know about seeding, Dr.
Nope.
Joe? Do you know about that?
No.
The seeding. So there's new evidence that talks about how in the vagina there's all kinds of great bacteria that's good for the baby.
Oh yes.
So right
I have
now,
heard about this.
Yes, so there's a new trend even that if you don't have a vaginal birth, because a vaginal birth can be really good for the baby with the bacteria, that you put a 4x4, sterile 4x4 into the vagina after the surgical birth and wipe the baby down.
Nice.
Do you know about that?
I had heard about that. Yes. So
yeah.
That the baby still gets the bacteria.
Mm-hmm. So are there questions specifically about like having a vaginal birth that you want to know more about?
Well, a lot of my friends have had problems afterwards and they have said to me, oh, you have no idea what it's like after, whether it's pain afterwards or.
You mean while they're recovering or for years afterwards?
Months after. So, or granular tissue or scar tissue. I don't know if that's the same thing. You know, still peeing every time they sneeze, that kind of stuff.
Right. So are these women who are like getting chiropractic care beforehand? Because we live in a society where everybody's driving in cars and everybody's doing Pilates. So we've got really tight hip flexors, unusually tight. You know, are these women who are addressing those issues and getting chiropractic beforehand to make sure they're open? Are these women who are getting epidurals and getting Pitocin so when they push, they're really not able to feel and the body's contracting? In a way that might not be the body's rhythm, and they're pushing, they're not listening to their body, and they're not standing up, and they're not moving, and they're not sitting while they're pushing.
Actually, you know, these are all women who had epidurals. I don't know if they had Pitocin. I know that so many people do get induced these days, so perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Right. So my question becomes, or getting epidurals and seeing these as side effects of that, is it the fact that women are numb and they're lying in bed while they're pushing and we're seeing more of that and we're seeing less of that when a woman is unmedicated and moving around and sitting on a ball or sitting on the toilet or in a tub and she's able to push and feel at the same time? The other thing is I hear your concerns about the postpartum. Do you know in France they actually have the medical system supports a woman postpartum with postpartum pelvic support? We don't do that here in America. Like, you have to search it out to find a great chiropractor or somebody who really helps with strengthening the pelvic floor afterwards, whereas it's routine in France.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't we talk about that last time, Dr. Jay?
Yeah, we did. We also had that Apex device we were sort of...
Apex-M.
Yeah, Apex-M. Device you can use to help build the musculature and stuff.
Despite all of this, though, I think if someone were to tell me it's better for the baby, or rather, you're putting the baby at risk by having an unnatural, and I know that's not a popular word anymore to describe this childbirth, that might be the thing that would sway me. Like, is it, because I know that they'll give you fentanyl, which very much appeals to me. They only give you 3 doses, but is that bad for the baby?
You know how many doses they
give? Yeah, I already talked to my doctor about it.
That's interesting.
Well, I think it becomes a risk benefit assessment. To think it's just this is good and that is bad is an outdated way of thinking. It's risk and benefit. You know, what is the risk of a cesarean birth with the scar tissue in the uterus and possibly it growing, you know, having internalized scar tissue because of a surgical birth? You know, and does that become a better way of birthing the baby because maybe you've got fears of a vaginal birth or I don't know, something else going on around the granulation in the vagina from tearing because you can't feel the pushing?
Yeah, I had
had. Does that make sense of how to look at it?
Yes,
but there's risk for this surgical birth.
I'd had surgery. I have endometriosis and I had ovarian cysts and I'd had surgery and I've had polyps removed twice. And now that I think about it, I've had dudes with scalpels all up in my junk so many times that maybe I'm just like, why not have this be
one
that
more.
Too?
Take this one out also.
Why start being natural now? I guess the more that I talk about it, the more I'm realizing it's just I'm used to this all being a clinical surgical thing.
I can just say just witnessing the whole thing over 10 months, I was like you. I was like, well, you know, as long as the baby's healthy, get it out and whatever. I didn't realize like what an experience. And watching Chrissy go through that experience, and we had a hell of a experience. I don't want to scare you with the details, but it was long, and it involved both epidural and Pitocin and some sort of morphine of some sort. But in the end, it was like a spiritual experience for her going through that, right? I'm not saying that you can't have that having a C-section. I just don't see how you could. You go to a hospital and point around. You go into surgery. Right. The baby comes out. There was something really life, you know, like very literary about the experience, right?
And like a hero's journey.
Yeah, Bruce, do you have any concerns?
The heroine's journey.
Are you hearing all this?
No.
Oh, you can't hear it.
Well, I have something to say, though.
Allison, we don't know how your body is going to react to labor. You might be that woman who's not in pain and doesn't really feel a lot until the end. So to give a black and white answer, I think would be would not be the right way to go. It's more we'd sit down and I'd educate you about how the body works and what happens and what goes on for the babies on the inside and really give you that information, you know, which takes a few hours. And then for you to look at me after that and go, my God, it's amazing how the body works, and that's not for me.
Can Elizabeth, can we talk about pain? Because what I observed was the dropping seemed to be more painful to Chrissy than the actual birth, the contraction.
The dropping.
That's when it was.
What do you call it, dropping?
When the baby's moving
the
down.
Engagement?
Yeah, the engagement. Can you tell laymen or guys, like, where does all this pain come from? It's obvious that a baby is coming out of your vagina. That's going to be painful. But it seemed like the dropping was excruciating, screaming pain.
Oh, good.
Well, thanks. So,
what is
I'm
that dropping, whatever that is?
More about your anatomy and what's going on with your pelvis. And I'm wondering if it's really hurting because you've got, I don't know, maybe really tight abs.
Yeah, tiny,
like
tiny little pelvis
in your hips.
I don't have this problem. So
yeah,
that's
yeah.
Susan, you had a question?
Well, I was worried about having a cesarean, but you've had experience with abdominal surgeries before, so you understand what the aftermath of that is, which is not pleasant.
Right.
I mean, I may
although
have
mine was laparoscopic.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I had triplets, which is a little different because my uterus was the size of Wisconsin. But you know the I also had a hernia repair, and I've had a couple of surgeries down there, and the recovery was pretty tough too. Now I don't have any of the side effects. I can jump on a trampoline without peeing my pants.
What does that mean?
I don't know. She brought it up. I don't.
I know exactly what it means.
That is girl talk right there.
Yeah, it means she won't pee herself from bouncing up
it's
and down.
Stress urinary incontinence.
Okay, there's a doctor version.
Yeah, I can't even cough without peeing a little bit.
One of our favorite sponsors was Apex M, and we have the machine to tighten those up. But anyways. No, but I do know that I did not like the pain after the cesarean. Mm-hmm. It might be short.
Elizabeth, she had an alias afterwards. A bad alias.
Oh, wow.
Oh, but that's where the bowels paralyze?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You can't sit up. You can't, I mean, I know.
But see, nobody's talking about those risks.
Yeah.
And that's part of the challenge of the conversation. It's become so Every day, it's like, oh, I'll go in and get a cesarean birth and I'll go home. And there's all these risks nobody talks about. And one of the things nobody talks about is the possibility of lifelong scar tissue that's traveling up into the abdominal cavity.
Yeah.
Are you talking about adhesions?
Yeah.
Adhesions, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time they open mm-hmm. your abdomen, you can get that. You probably already have, Madison.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my God, that's reassuring.
No, but I do with the endometriosis, probably already have it.
Okay.
Right. So nobody's having those conversations. And again, it's not a bad. It's just, you know the risks when you get into it so you can make a good choice for your family. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's important.
I have one question. My mom was in labor with me for only a couple hours and then with my sister for like half an hour, something insanely fast. Does that mm-hmm. bode well for me having fast deliveries?
Do you have a physicality like her?
I think so.
Yeah, no, it actually does. Okay, they say good. That you end up birthing like your mom. So everything that you are telling me, you sound like a great candidate for a vaginal birth. And I
want to
respect you.
We'll give you the fentanyl now.
Your vagina is magical.
You know, and three fentanyl shots.
What I'm hearing is you like to control things,
yes.
which I totally respect. But I'm also hearing you haven't had like a childbirth ed class where someone has sat down and just explained how the body works and how the hormones work and the physicality. Because one option for you might be, listen, I am educated, I get it, but I am not doing this more than 6 hours. And once we hit 6 hours, I'm getting the epidural. And then once we hit this boundary, I want cesarean birth. Like, you can create that so you have control over
that's
the
what we
you
had.
Control.
That's what we had.
The birth plan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Have you thought mm-hmm. about it?
I'm just starting to think about it now. I mean, I think...
She's been preoccupied with the fentanyl up to this point.
I've been what?
Preoccupied with the fentanyl.
Yeah, you could put that in. 2 hours fentanyl. 2 hours fentanyl. And get through the first 6 hours. No, you can have it 2 hours just like your mom.
You probably will birth very similar to your mother.
Oh, good. Well,
all
thank
right.
you.
Elizabeth, we're going to move on here. I appreciate you calling in so much.
Thank
it's
you
Grace,
so much.
Graceful.
Pleasure catching up.
Graceful.com. Yes, two L's?
Graceful has two L's, full of grace. Thank you.
Right in Silver Lake.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. We're going to take a little break. Be right back.
There you go.
All right, we're back again, Bobby.
Yes, we are here talking about the most female of subjects.
Well, let's review our Bergamet friends at bergametna.com. Also, Aloe House.
Aloe House Recoveries from Malibu.
Bruce Heischober still hanging out here. He's got a mic now. My wife has finally kindly given it. But you have to actually put it near your mouth, Bruce.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Was he always like that? He
yes. So. Yeah, so but he doesn't have his stack of papers that's falling everywhere.
So you've delivered 25 babies.
Adam compared me to Drew all the time, though, of course, with my microphone bad habits.
Drew has delivered 25 babies. Oh. Bruce, you so many you can't even count, right?
No, just one with a... With the umbilical
room.
Cord tied.
Oh, really?
Oof.
That's what I want to talk about. So,
who came in for a urinary tract infection? Didn't know she was pregnant.
Oh, yes, wow. That's what I'm talking about.
How does that happen?
And the nurse came back and said, "Your doggone patient peed her pants in the waiting room."
Oh, it was she broke her water.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh my goodness. So it's just miraculous to me because I just witnessed it. The whole thing just operates. Right. So what is a doctor's role in that whole process to catch the baby?
Recognize the position.
Recognize position.
I mean, they're vital signs, you know, with the mom, the baby.
Know when there's trouble.
Right.
But, you know.
That's it. Know when there's trouble and to help move things along and move things through.
So, but when it goes into a medical procedure like what Allison's talking about, like operation, C-section, that becomes doctor stuff.
Well, the episiotomy, we have to do that, right?
Yeah.
But they don't always do that, right? That's
you don't,
not an always.
Believe me, that you don't feel it.
I know, that's what I've heard.
Yeah, yeah. And it gets stitched up. Yeah. So, but let's talk about C-sections, because I was very pro C-section. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want my woman to suffer and be in pain and all that.
No
like,
selfish reason for that?
Huh?
No selfish reason.
No.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I've
dirty bird.
I've been through it before. It's all that whole thing is exaggerated, I think. But was some of your friends saying that they're not as satisfied sexually or something?
No, not that they haven't said that they're not as satisfied. They've said that it has been painful.
Oh.
Sex was painful.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a lot of stuff that can go wrong down there.
great.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. He's really pushing for C-section.
I mean, what I understand.
Oh, he is. He's 100% pro C-section.
No, not 100%. But I mean, I think about like Mary Todd Lincoln, right?
Yeah.
Mary Todd Lincoln had a cloaca by the time she was done.
Really?
She had a third degree tear.
That's why Lincoln was depressed. It wasn't the mercury.
It's one of the reasons she was a little nutty, too. She had torn her vagina and her rectum into one cat.
Oh, my God. Oh, like a bird.
What?
This is for your guys' doctor show.
No, that happens. Rectal tears.
Don't listen to them, Allison.
Bob,
a cloaca is like a bird's genitals, right?
Like a cow.
Okay.
But Bob.
Oh, my God.
Bobby.
Oh, my God.
What's so weird is...
this woman's trying to decide whether to have a C-section or natural birth, and you just cinched it.
But what's crazy to me is Elizabeth and I discussed third-degree tears when she was in here.
Oh, really?
We were discussing it.
So how you're familiar with third-degree tears, Allison?
I haven't heard the whole episode, but I can't wait to hear. What is... How do you... What's the difference degree of tearing?
I wasn't supposed
tearing?
To mention episiotomy. I'm sorry.
No, episiotomy, that's nothing compared to cloaca.
Well, it's supposed to prevent the third-degree
right.
tears you cut so it doesn't tear all the way through.
Oh, my goodness, doctors.
See?
Okay, so also, baby will come out whether you do that or not. Baby comes out.
Yeah, or both baby and mommy die. I mean, that can happen.
Oh, my God.
It could happen.
No, I know.
Just saying it happened.
A friend of mine was just saying, because we were talking about people that have their babies in a birthing center yeah. versus a hospital, and he yeah. was saying that we've become so desensitized to how dangerous childbirth can be.
Well, now that there was this, did you see that data recently? It showed there's been a marked increase in complications in pregnancies
right.
lately.
And a marked
what's
increase
that from?
I guess.
Where are you delivering?
Hypertension.
Cedars.
Hypertension.
I think it's where people are delivering more than anything.
Could it also have to do with the age? Because people are getting pregnant so much later. I'm 85.
Yeah, I know. It's a little late.
Yeah.
Don't look at it.
I look great for 85.
And you really do.
Thank you.
And Elizabeth is a real serious professional. I'm not disparaging what she or her guys are doing at all. It's just you got to be objective and look at these things. That's all. I mean, I don't, I like it not having a horse in the race. I like just the way I feel about politics, too. I just like looking at the data.
But if it was your daughter, what would you be advising her? Or is it too situational?
No, it's a great question. Well, I like Elizabeth's approach and like, where's the woman at? And, and does she have all the information? But I think I'd be cool with a C-section. To me, it feels, I have a weird thing, which is like medical problems in the field really bother me because I feel out of control. When you bring those medical problems and bring them into an ICU or a surgical suite or an ER or something, I'm perfectly cool because I know we can handle it.
Right, because so, you have everything you need.
Yeah,
there.
And so it's that kind of like psychology is creeping in here. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not to be devil's advocate, but aren't there a lot of people who die in hospitals of complications of medical, bureaucratic?
Sure. No. Most
well, how do people die in a hospital that wouldn't normally die?
That's overblown. There's an article in today's New York Times in the health section talking about it's sort of lying with statistics.
Why do they call it medical?
Here's why.
What do they call it? Medical mistakes.
Medical
that's what they
misadventures.
Call it.
Here's what happens. The majority of medication errors have no consequence, but people then get a weird infection. People who are dying, who are really really sick, will get so-called super infections with crazy Acinetobacter infections, things like that, and then that goes down as a hospital death. Even though they were dying
what
anyway.
What is it called? Misadventure?
Yeah, medical misadventure.
Iatrogenic.
Is that a myth? So medical misadventure is
a myth?
Myth.
No. Not a myth. We will fuck you up if you're not careful.
That's what I'm asking.
No, I always say, you every time you walk in a doctor's office, you better be there for a good reason. But if you're there for a good reason, we can usually diminish the risk.
And when somebody comes in front of you guys, they're either going to get a scalpel, a prescription pad, or a good talking to, right?
Right.
That's pretty much your options, isn't it?
Yeah, but Bob, they're not happy with the good talking to.
No, that's true.
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
See, I worry that I've become too inured to the risks of general anesthesia because I grew up very afraid of general anesthesia.
They don't do necessarily general for a C-section.
Oh, right. No, I'm just talking about just in general.
Yeah, I hate general anesthesia. Oh.
I hated it. Until, like, I had my wisdom teeth out under local. My dad's a doctor and very overprotective and very, like, don't.
He's a psychiatrist, wasn't he?
No. My grandfather was a psychiatrist. Okay, my dad's just a GP, retired. But very much, like, don't don't have more medical intervention than you
right.
need.
Oh, my
don't
God. Ever... I was raised by the same guy.
Okay. So we have the same dad.
Yeah, we have the same dad. And but that's why, like, overuse of antibiotics and things like that to me are just bizarre.
Right.
I can't stand it.
Yeah.
And the fact that people go for a medication for everything.
But wait a
Most
minute.
Of my career at working in a psychiatric hospital was spent dealing with the effects of medication,
mm-hmm.
the horrible misadventures from medication. Not misadventures in the sense of the wrong things prescribed, misadventures in terms of side effects and horrible consequences of medication.
So your father has a horse in the race. It's his grandson, right?
Yeah, he hasn't talked to me at all about my childbirth. I know that, you know, I asked my mom, why did you do natural childbirth? And it was my dad really, it was him saying...
Do less.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think the idea then was... It's more pro-woman to do it naturally because the medical community wants to, like, shut you up. And, you know, women make all sorts of noises and go through all sorts of stuff in
when
natural
was
childbirth.
This? When were you born?
I was born in 75.
Yeah. That was what was going on then.
Right. So the idea was, like, people are afraid of women's this is what I think what my dad thought. People are afraid of women's reactions. The medical community wants to just, like, give you something to make you docile and quiet, but it's natural and it's beautiful and it's best for the baby to do it naturally. Whereas now there's this other way of looking at it, which is if a man was having it, he wouldn't be expected to have it naturally.
Right.
So I don't even know.
And the pendulum, that natural pendulum swung back towards C-section again. It swings back and forth. You know, where is it now, do you think?
Where is that pendulum?
I know friends who had epidurals and were induced.
Pretty much everybody has epidurals.
A couple of my friends, one of them had her baby in a birthing center, it was her second baby, and one of them just had her third baby and decided on this one she wanted to do it naturally. And she did and said it hurt.
Was she glad she did it or not?
I haven't asked her that yet. I think that it was just like I go to this same restaurant all the time and I always have the same thing. I'm going to try something different. I think that she's done it enough now that it was like I just want to see what it's like. I think the sense I get is if she were to do it again, she probably wouldn't do it naturally.
Do you care about the prevailing cultural imperative where the pendulum is swinging?
No.
What do you want to do?
I want to do what's best for the baby. So what will be the deciding factor for me is if someone sits me down and says, look, I know you want the fentanyl and I know you want the epidural and I know that you want to feel as little as possible, but that's bad for the baby.
Well, if it can't
come from my dad because I won't believe him.
If I were the baby,
right?
I wouldn't mind the fentanyl. It won't hurt me.
Nope.
And I would want to be by C-section. I wouldn't want to go down that birth canal if I didn't have to. Just saying, a meconium facial does not sound like a good time.
I'm just saying. Now, what about
when she started talking about wiping?
I know.
I was thinking for meconium. Yeah. This is fantastic.
You know what's interesting? The studies on bacterial colonization, C-section versus vaginal delivery. Have you seen that?
No. What'd it say?
Well, they talk about your whole immune system can be dependent upon colonization of the GI tract by passing through the birth
canal.
Oh, this
is what she was talking about. That's what she was actually saying. You didn't hear it because you had the headphones on. She was saying you should take a swab of what's going on there and put rubber.
But they don't know if that's adequate because it's GI colonization and development of asthma, autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. And they've gone down to South America to communities to try.
It's called seeding, right? That's what she called it, seeding.
But I don't know if the seeding works. But I mean, it's an interesting theory. I mean, it's just like too much cleanliness is the cause of asthma and autoimmune disorders. But even more so that in developed countries with C-sections, you're not allowing this, and that seeding may not be adequate.
So they were looking at the babies that were down there. Looking at the
guests.
Well, all the ones that – the other ones are dead. All the rest of them didn't make it. You know what I'm saying? That's a weird sampling.
But there was also a sampling where there was no antibiotic usage in their history. It was just a pure.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm
so I don't know what the final verdict on that is, but that's. So she's going to do seeding if you have a C-section.
Did your dad ever let you take antibiotics?
Yes.
My dad never let me take antibiotics, ever. Entire adolescent, childhood, everything.
Really? Yeah, vibromycin usually was the one that he would.
Yeah,
that was doxycycline. Yeah.
But I think now he thinks, does he think this? Or does, I think he thinks Z-Packs are over. Z-Packs
way
or Cipro
overdone.
Or something
that's
like
overdone.
Way too much.
Way
too
over.
Much overdone.
They make me feel better when I take a Z-Pack. I don't know why.
But Z-Pax were supposed to be the thing against the big bug, the kind of bug that was going to kill us all. Anthrax. And some mass they get, killing,
they get,
right?
Well, Cipro was, but Cipro, they, but right. they, but then they get resistance. Then we
I know, so then we start taking it all the time for the flu. Or
have you seen the resistance? I just read a study on H. pylori treatment, yeah. And the resistance is incredible with...
I'm not sure we should be treating that anyway.
Oh, they're going to 4 weeks.
Let us non-doctors in. What's H. pylori?
Yeah.
It's a bacteria that's sort of embedded in the lining of the stomach and the maybe the esophagus too, right? That causes ulcer disease.
Everybody thought ulcers were from, you know, eating bad food and taking aspirin, but this is bacteria.
Let me ask you doctors this. So my favorite food prior to pregnancy was artificial sweetener. Like my blood is like was 90% artificial sweetener, Splenda and Truvia. And I stopped using any of that now that I'm pregnant because my fertility doctor and my OB said they don't have enough research to know.
Okay.
Do you agree with that? Because I'm dying to go back to artificial
Here's
sweetener.
Here's my deal with pregnant women. You pristine.
Right.
Ugh. Don't do anything.
Right.
Okay.
Don't take an antibiotic.
What about
stevia?
Stevia.
It tastes horrible.
I've been avoiding too because
I'm convinced we're going to find out stevia is worse than...
After Breaking Bad, I can't have stevia.
It's going to be worse than the other one.
So can we
one.
Just clarify, because I'm just learning this stuff that I'm paying attention now lately, the last few years. Everybody keeps saying C-section or natural childbirth, and then categorizing getting epidural and the Pitocin as not a natural childbirth. So I don't understand. There seems to be...
I think it's C-section or vaginal.
Yeah.
And then there's medicated or unmedicated.
Yeah. So and medicated... Vaginal births are frowned upon by the hippie crowd?
You just heard Catherine, or why do I want to call her Catherine all the time? Elizabeth just gave a whole disquisition on why she felt you lose certain...
Because you push at the wrong time.
Natural advantage,
right.
You
numb.
Tear, yeah. You get that, you know.
But they reduce the epidural and you start to zero in. That's what happened. That's what I watched happen.
I understand. And you know, I'm not an obstetrician, so I'm way out of my league here. I don't know, how do you feel about that, Bruce?
No, yeah. It's almost like what the Heisenberg and certainly even observing something maybe changes the outcome,
right.
And any little thing you do might change the natural outcome. So it can get ridiculous to me, giving the fentanyl and Pitocin. It's ridiculous to think that would affect the health of the baby. That's just
we're way more resilient than that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Oh, good. Oh, great.
So I think it's just a question for you, and I think the next your 20 weeks, next 18 weeks, you've got to decide vagina or no vagina.
Well, and then
really, that's your ultimate decision.
But then,
because you
when
know
you decide,
you're going to get the dope and the Pitocin and the epidural.
If lo and behold, I'm not in that much pain, then I'll only get one dose. If it's a lot of pain, though, then I'm going to get three.
No, what I saw her light up as the birth plan. Like, I'll go for 2 hours like this and 4 hours like that.
I did light up. Like, however, I know so many people who had a birth plan and
threw
then
it out as soon as
as soon as they got there, it turned out that they ended up having to get a C. Like, I know people who were dead set against C sections, and they end up having to have them because there's some complication. Yeah.
Well, thank goodness.
Baby's
thank
too
goodness
big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or no, there's all kinds of stuff. You don't even
someone I knew had their umbilical cord was like wrapped in a knot or something.
Mm. That's what you had.
That's what I delivered.
No, it was around the neck. Same thing.
What'd you have to do?
Unwrap it real quick.
It came out?
Sometimes it's so tight. I've been in births where it's so tight it rips. And
right. I got it off. But
oh my God. No, don't listen to these guys. Think about Claremont Colleges and the old days and literature and
Infinite Jest. By the way,
think about finishing Infinite Jest.
You could be reading until after the C-section.
I know, all the way through.
But as it pertains to Infinite Jest, I didn't squeeze out something I wanted to say, which was that it's the best description of marijuana addiction I've ever seen. He goes into a psych hospital and I forget if he was describing him or somebody. He was himself.
Himself.
And marijuana withdrawal was. He described it so
perfectly. But he also had
perfectly.
Depression, too.
No, I understand.
Obviously, towards the end there.
I'm just saying that he was a bad drug addict, too.
Yeah.
But the pot description was so accurate. It was so well done. My God. And I've never seen anybody really just describe it that honestly.
Yeah, the first 200 pages, I'm like, that's a parallel universe that I was living in.
Yes,
And then it just got a little too fancy so for me.
Well, the fancy and the tennis kept taking me out.
Yes. And all the names. I was like, who is that? Yeah.
You're supposed to go to the back and look it up. There's 200 pages of footnotes.
Oh, my God. No.
I have a question for Dr. Drew.
He wrote that in Sober Living. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. Yeah. Wow. Question for Dr. Drew, which is unrelated to anything we've talked about, but it's just something I'm curious about, so I wanted to ask.
Okay.
I have noticed you have in terms of interviewing and in terms of what you do, you have a talent for really kind of honing in on people's vulnerabilities. And I mean this in a positive way. And I know it's sounds negative. I mean in a positive way. And sort of like getting to the fissures or the cracks in their personality structure, let's say.
Well, just what's important to them, what's meaning. And usually there's pain attached to that.
Yeah, the pain, I guess. Yeah. And what I'm wondering is, because I think that I have this a bit too in my interviewing, but do you think that you are able to do that because you kind of sense something and just kind of go there? Or do you think that there's something about you that makes people just open up naturally?
No, it's something I sense. And having been the object of therapy for so many years, it sort of, you begin appreciating when somebody cares about things that are very powerful.
Empathic skill. You're like, and you know who else does that? Howard Stern.
Yes, Howard Stern exactly does it. He's been in psychoanalysis 3 days a week for 15 or 20 years, and absolutely he's using the same
thing. I hate the whack pack, but when he interviews people, and you have the same capacity, it's sort of an empathic skill.
I'm aware of it, and I'm aware of it when I'm the object of it, because when Howard has interviewed me, I would thought, oh, I know what this feels familiar. It's kind of an openness. It's an opening, and not being afraid of what's there. People are afraid to push on people's important stuff. And to me, that's what's why are we even conversing if we're not talking what's really important to you?
And do you feel like it's an intellectual thing,
no,
though?
Not at
it's
all.
Just a sense thing,
brain, okay. Right brain.
Yeah.
Because we, first of all, again, in my own therapy and stuff, I needed a lot of that because I was disconnected from that part. Mm-hmm. So in order to connect it, you have to have the other person there helping you connect it. In treating drug addicts, we couldn't believe anything that was coming out of their mouth. So we'd have to just intuit
everything.
So we'd constantly, I'd just go, well, what's that? You know, I would never even think about what was going to come out of my mouth. I would just learn to trust it. And sometimes I would say crazy things. I would just say, whoa, what did I just say? Where'd that come from? But I don't say those things unless there's something being evoked.
Right.
And so I learned to trust that. So something in the other person. And that's really a spiritual spot. It's a very powerful spot to be in. We kind of did it when I was on your podcast, or when you were on mine a little bit.
Both, I think. I recall when you were on mine, you said you were talking about how you used to have panic attacks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you said you felt like you were going to have one. That's the feeling I like to evoke in my guests.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Power.
But that's how visceral it was for you.
We had a love fest. I think my wife's going to play it for us at the end of the show.
Well,
yes.
Think people know I've long had a crush on Dr. Drew. It's you. It's Bobcat Goldthwait, and there's someone else, and I can't remember who that third person is, and I'm sorry to the third person. It will come to me.
You love us so much, you can't remember us. It's the progesterone.
That's right. That's pregnancy brain.
And you've met, I'm sure, Bobcat through Corolla and stuff, right?
Yes, I've had him on my show. I just had him on somewhat recently.
Did you ever talk to him about Robin Williams?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Bob, the story is Robin Williams did not have depression. He had like a Lewy body dementia, which presents as a depression, but he was getting a rapidly progressive sort of frontal temporal dementia.
And then pulling out of it and realizing what he did?
No, not pulling out of it. He would call Bob in these states where he's like, am I okay? Am I losing my mind?
I thought he had another thing where he was getting diagnosed with all kinds of things. You didn't hear that?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, he got diagnosed. Well,
before they made the diagnosis, they were calling him Parkinson's and all kinds
of
things.
Yeah.
And so that it has Parkinson's.
Hadn't he been to drug treatment like within a couple months?
He had an alcohol relapse, but I think it was long before.
They knew he had the syndrome, the cognitive.
I think he got diagnosed way late in the thing. They was sort of looking like a Parkinsonian thing. Because I remember Rob Schneider saying Parkinson's to me.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, that's terrible. And then maybe that's where the depression's coming from. And I was talking to, he was getting hallucinatory too, which is part of the Lewy body dementia.
Wow.
And I was telling Schneider, who was very concerned about him, that maybe it was the meds from the Parkinson's.
Wow.
But I don't know. I was hearing it all second and third hand. And it just sounded, for such a guy that gave so much to so many people, I just was so devastated to hear what he was going through there at the end. It just sounded awful. Ugh.
Yeah. I talked to Bob mostly about his experience with his own grief afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Which was devastating.
Did he feel like he could do something? He should have stepped in?
No.
No.
They were best friends.
I know.
Yeah. He was real close to the family too.
But what was his he had unsettled feelings?
He missed
about
his
it?
Friend.
Yeah, I mean, he just was in pain.
Yeah, and seeing his friend go through that and then missing him. It was like,
well, it's funny we're talking about David Foster Wallace. He had a similar thing where it's too long a story, but he was on some antipsychotic medicine since the time of Infinite Jest. Mm-hmm. And somehow he got food poisoning, he was in the hospital, his meds got changed. They said, oh, no, you don't need to be on this. Those are archaic. Those are old-fashioned. Be on this new stuff. He never really quite pulled out of it and used to tell people at the AA meetings in Claremont, like, maybe you should come and sleep on the couch at my house because I think I'm going to kill myself. Wow. And that went on for months, and him going back and forth to psychiatrists trying to – part of me doesn't believe it, like he was being a baby, but you know, it's so hard. And then
we have to be there to really know.
It's so crazy.
What did he ultimately have? He
hung himself.
No, what was his diagnosis?
He was drug addict and bipolar. Oh, okay.
No, just major depression. And so, you know, and I felt like that when I heard Robin Williams was having problems for 5 years before that horrible day. So he was having battles with sobriety. He was being mean to people sometimes.
Right.
As far back as 3 years before he died.
That's sort of
that
that's
saw
all
him as so unlike him.
Yeah.
And they were blaming his wife for that. I hate to say it.
But then also.
And that people are brainwashing him, getting around him, and now he's turning against his friends. All kinds of horrible shit was going on in the 12 step community.
Well, then, of course, they start saying, oh, he must be using, blah, blah, blah. That stuff starts
he
going
was,
on.
He was, though.
You know what the most, speaking of Howard Stern, the craziest.
I think he turned to it as a solution to the way that he was feeling.
Maybe. One of the craziest, you're right, maybe that's why he did relapse. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Craziest stories as it pertains to Howard and Robin. Strangely, we're talking about both of them. Howard Stern told a story on the air about how he was sitting at his desk, and last time he'd seen Robin Williams was like back when he was on terrestrial radio, and he was sort of a dick to him, and he was sort of abusive, and that kind of way Howard used to be. Mm-hmm. And he said, he was sitting at his desk, he goes, you know, we were trying to connect. I miss that guy. I was such an ass. I got to call him. I'm getting him on the show. I'm going to call him and apologize to him. His wife walked him in the room and went, oh my God, Robin Williams is dead.
Oh my God.
Imagine. That talking about intuitive stuff.
I bet that depressed Stern like crazy because he's very
intuitive, but like a little bit too late.
A little too late.
Like, how intuitive are we talking about?
If you're really intuitive, you would have called him 2 weeks before.
But so that, you know, it's a crazy world, and that's what we have this show for, to just talk about all this life stuff that goes on in all these different people's lives. And it's, I don't know, somehow wonderful people have a other side of them. Right? I mean, it's just a given.
No.
Nobody.
What are you talking
there's
about?
No Robin Williamses that don't have a dark side to them.
Oh.
Right?
Performers.
We talked about. Who have we talked about the last couple of months? Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
Right? Rob. You know, he's not the most well balanced.
Rob Schneider? Yeah. Well, I'll bring him back. Let you tell him per person.
Well, I mean, I love him, but I watch his show. It's crazy. You watch it?
Yeah, but that's it. Okay, well, it's him.
That's him.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Have you watched it?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's...
My greatest moment was when I told him that they'd overcasted the wife. It was his actual wife. She's way too hot for you, obviously.
And there's a thing that's kind of like the David Spade situation. And like, it's too close to home, that show.
Yeah,
but it's all darkness and weirdness and like the Led Zeppelin stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
For some reason, the people that... evoke that can touch people.
Artists
have a
artistry.
There's a dark side that it's true. I know that. What's
Allison's dark side?
Yeah,
because Allison's an artist.
Ew. She's a control freak. I know what she's like in real life. I've married people like that.
I'm not that much of a control freak.
I'm being as honest as I can. Okay.
The listeners can't see the look on my face. It's like dumbstruck. Excuse me.
Gobsmacked.
I like control, okay?
So we have
gone to a very strange place very quickly.
No, but it's true.
It's
have okay
depression.
To like control. It's okay.
Yeah.
That's why I think you like the dope, because dope is like is a way of controlling and letting go at the same time.
Well, that's why I like the Versed.
Yes.
Fentanyl, I don't like as much.
See, I'm in the Versed camp.
Oh, my God.
First operation I ever had was a hernia repair about 10 years ago, and they were wheeling me down the hall after some Versed, and I thought, oh my God, this is what it feels like to be awake and not be anxious.
Yes, it was the first. I was thinking of all these disturbing, sad things, and they didn't upset me.
Yeah.
I was like, I truly feel no pain. I feel so good right now.
That's what heroin feels like to me. So all right, whatever.
So do you feel better now?
Have you got a sting?
I got Norco when I got a hernia repair. I loved it.
Uh-oh.
Took it for 5 days, stopped, and 2 days later I was depressed and realizing
there's that rebound.
Better it's living like, through chemistry.
Well, my poor patients, I had more empathy afterwards.
Yeah, I bet.
Because it's that's equal line, and it's opposite effect.
It's a minor version, too.
Right? Oh, yeah.
I know.
Do you feel better now than when you walked in here? I just want.
Yes.
Good.
There you go.
Allison, I don't feel worse.
Here's the bottom line. We're glad you're here.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I'm glad I have been. I am glad that I was here.
It's been way too long since either Bruce or I have seen you. This is ridiculous.
I agree.
Yes. We should be seeing you more. And
you guys have to come on my show.
All right. Done. Come together.
Great.
Yeah. I'd love to.
Fun. Oh, how fun.
Oh,
yeah.
I'd be honored.
Huh? Bob, too.
Bob, you can come, too.
Yeah, then we can promote this, all these different podcasts. And
great.
So good, perfect. That's, all
right, he'll explore your dark side.
No, that's a date. No, she'll explore ours. That's her
thing.
That's
right.
Yeah. So,
a name for the baby?
No, not yet. This is my impression of my husband with every name I suggest. Oh, God, no. So I don't know how we're going to name the baby. We're going to call him Oh, God, No.
Can you do a contraction of your names? Something.
God, no.
God, no. Oh, God. I'm sure we'll come up with something.
BergamotNA.com is the website. Check it out at doctor.com, thislifepodcast.com, as well as Aloe Recovery.
There you go.
Basic 12-step abstinence-based social model treatment. Get the real stuff, the real deal. Bob, we'll see you there. And that about does it for This Life Podcast. We'll see you next time. Thank you. We're starting to get to an area where, see, because this is the feeling area, and I just want you to have my phone number.
Are you serious?
I'm just saying, I've done a lot of thinking about you, and I think there's something here that really, this is like ridiculous.
Oh, what?
Absolutely, 100%. And you, it's okay. Are you embarrassed by that?
No, I love talking about...
You're flushing a little bit.
I am. Actually, to be ultra sincere, I was telling someone recently that I am in love with Dr. Drew. I mean, I couldn't have thought of you in a better way, but now I have a more full image of the perfection that is you.
Think of me differently now?
No. I didn't know you felt this way about me. If anything, I think it's made me realize, wow, I just feel warm and happy, and I don't even know if I would have known that was possible. Here's my question, though. Do you feel those kind of things?
Yes. And strangely, we always were very intense together.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want a real relationship.
Yes! We're perfect together. So, Drew, so that night when we hugged to say goodbye, I knew.
I mean,
you knew it without me even having to say. It was just clear. Like, I knew.
Yeah.
And I felt this, like, magnetic...
Yeah, that thing.
...draw, yeah.
And you feel that vividly. Right now, I feel like this is what I want to do. We're going to go out tonight.
Let's do it.
Now, let's leave dinner at 5:30. How about that? Let's go to Newport.
That sounds super exciting.
Okay, done and done.
I think that sounds great. Oh. Unhealthy question, but I'm going to ask anyway. Would it have been possible for us to actually have gotten stuck in the friend zone?
Sure.
Really?
We were not ready to sort of be with somebody.
Yeah. Well, is that something you want?
Oh my God. Yes. So much so that it's ridiculous.
Like, what do you think it was that you responded so strongly to?
I don't know. I think what happened was we're starting to get to an area where, see, because this is the feeling area. It's weird. I'm having a physical reaction.
Oh, yeah. I feel it happening right now. It feels like we're perfect together.
Imagine you and I being married, my dear.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
You're not one of those people that make your own salad dressing right there. You know, like...
No. I just order dressing on the side. But I am someone who sometimes has a complicated order.
Welcome to Newport Steakhouse. Are you ready to order...
Kind of.
What do you want?
Our special tonight is a wonderful cream trout with a dill meringue.
No, I don't do that.
I don't think I would enjoy that. I couldn't smell anything dill.
Well, then perhaps our Dungeness crab would be...
Hey, I'm not a parrot. I don't want to have to crack that thing open.
Fine, fine. So, what kind of dressing would you like on your salad?
I need Italian dressing without the oil.
Ooh la la, I'm the fancy doctor that has to have a trendy dressing.
It's not a trendy dressing. It's an outdated dressing.
Yes, wonderful. I'll get that while your wife decides what she wants.
Well, we're not married yet.
You know, I was a singer, opera singer, believe it or not, at one mm-hmm. point for like 3 seconds.
Wow. Do you still sing?
Occasionally. I really miss singing. I need to have that in my life.
Really? I just want to hear it.
I feel, what the fuck? Why am I always struggling so much?
I just didn't want you to be uncomfortable if that's something that you'd...
No, no. Fuck, this is like ridiculous. You need to listen to this, my dear.